morning, Cascadia. Today is, of course, Tuesday, December 31st, 2013. And you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM. And first few headlines to get through before we speak with our guest, Shahid Buttar, with the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. Who better to launch us into another year of full-on, as it were, combat with the NSA over the very last shreds of our rights and our privacies. A King County Superior Judge has struck down the voter approved $15 an hour minimum wage for the vast majority of workers. The measure was aimed to help. That was from yesterday. We have other headlines for you this morning. There apparently is a move out to promote more testing of drones, and one of the sponsors behind the move in Oregon to open up Oregon skies to drone testing is none other than our own Senator Ron Wyden, who has been constantly referenced with regard to the NSA. He has, in fact, taken a courageous stand against spying on Americans. But what then are we to think of Senator Wyden when we see his name associated with the testing of surveillance drones over Cascadia? One just has to wonder about these sorts of things. And we say to ourselves, it can't happen here, it can't happen here, but it sure did happen in Castleton, North Dakota, where a massive explosion oil on a train, and that's exactly what is being contemplated for the Pacific Northwest, is train loads of oil, coal terminals, and the like, up and down our waterways and across our coasts. Flood insurance fiasco in Oregon. That's yet another one. Apparently FEMA has been cleaning up, only not cleaning up after disasters, cleaning up financially by selling unneeded flood insurance to people. And there's a death derby, $1,000 for the biggest wolf, $1,000 for the most coyotes. They're raking it in the mountain states. Here, closer to home, here in Oregon, an environmental group is joining the fight against the sale of Water Bureau property without any, I repeat, public oversight or comment. We have other stories, but the main story to which I commend your attention is a piece by the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's Shahid Buttar. We have the dueling rulings on the NSA spying and why it doesn't matter what one judge says in D.C. and another judge in New York say about the NSA and its activities, what we are likely in store for, and what Edward Snowden himself indeed has in store in the way of surprises for the rest of the world. Joining us this morning, we're very fortunate to have Shahid Buttar, the Executive Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. Good morning, Shahid.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Well, we're just delighted to have you on the last day of the year. What could possibly be better than to welcome you back to the KBOO airwaves? I'm going to step aside here. I just want to ask you, I saw this on Counterpunch. It originated, of course, on the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's website, and it's an extraordinarily important piece of writing, and one which I certainly want to repost it on the KBOO website. Judge Pauley's ruling is really, why is it silly? Explain to listeners what you see in this. This is so important because these two rulings taken separately are two discrete news stories, but it's the connections between all of this that are significant.
I think that's right. Judge Pauley is the judge in New York City, a Clinton appointee, who last Friday issued a ruling saying that there's no Fourth Amendment problem with the NSA's domestic dragnet. And that, of course, is flatly implausible. Among the reasons why his judicial opinion is poorly reasoned, particularly he defers to executive claims that are simply false, both about the extent to which Congress has been included in the oversight loop. Judge Pauly explicitly notes that the program's been subject to rigorous oversight by all three branches of government, and that is not true. He also fell for executive spin about the effectiveness of the program, which has both been repudiated by members of Congress on the Intel committees and even the president's own review board that he announced in August and that just issued its recommendations to the president 2 weeks ago. Moreover, the assessment about the effectiveness of the NSA's program is not only beyond the institutional capacity of a judge to ascertain, but it's also irrelevant to the Fourth Amendment analysis. Another judge in D.C., Judge Leon, a Bush appointee, ironically, who took office in the very same year that the NSA began its assault on the American people, he found just 1 week prior that, in fact, not only is there a Fourth Amendment problem with the NSA's domestic dragnet spying operations, but that they are almost Orwellian in their scope, that they are, quote, indiscriminate and arbitrary, and that there is quite likely a Fourth Amendment problem, so much so that he kicked it straight up to the appellate court to review before he implements his stay. The upshot of all this, though, is that there are dueling rulings in the courts, and it will take years for them to iron themselves out. Each of these rulings will go up on appeal. They may ultimately find their way to the Supreme Court. But regardless, Congress, that will all take years, at least 2 years for the first stage and possibly three to get to the Supreme Court, assuming it gets that far. Congress is poised to act as soon as it reconvenes. And any action by Congress or the executive branch would likely moot the judicial process, which is to say the court rulings are interesting. It's great that they're getting people talking about it, but they are, however, ultimately a distraction. Congress is where the action's at. And you and your listeners are very fortunate to have one of the most outspoken leading members of the Senate, in particular Ron Wyden, carrying the constitutional water in a way that very few of his colleagues are.
What we find puzzling right now, however, is that Senator Ron Wyden is a proponent behind opening up Oregon skies to testing of drones, and we are told particularly surveillance drones. It's wonderful. Yeah, we're told, of course, that the drones that we're testing are the kinder, gentler drones, not the ones that kill people, just the ones that spy on you. So I'm right. Wondering, and you know, it's a matter of scale or degree. But when you talk about this this matter landing squarely in the middle of Congress when Congress reconvenes, I'm not heartened by that. What is Congress likely to make of this?
I think you're right to connect the issues between drone surveillance and the NSA's tapping at the back end of the internet and the phone system. They are very similar in the sense that they are both mass surveillance operations, unhinged from any individual suspicion and unhinged from any particular investigation that can track, monitor, and archive information about innocent people en masse that could and will inevitably chill their willingness to raise their voices about whatever they might care about, thereby harming everyone, not just them, but everybody else who could be informed by their opinions. And so to that extent, the dragnet surveillance by the NSA and drone surveillance are exactly the same. And you're right also to identify the, let's say, under-inclusion of the congressional debate. The last article I wrote before the one about the dueling court rulings specifically talks about the various threats in the domestic spying arena beyond the NSA that have not drawn sufficient public criticism. And drone aircraft are one example of those. In fact, there are other ways in which local and state police are using Department of Homeland Security grants to get essentially military equipment to use in domestic surveillance. So the idea that the military is developing these very sophisticated tools for international surveillance, and now your state and local police agencies are bringing them home. You know, when the drones start flying over the U.S., quite likely in 2015, if the Congress does not intervene, they will be essentially unregulated, and whatever Congress considers to restrain the NSA will likely not reach the drones or the other examples of domestic surveillance. People often forget not only is CBP, Customs and Border Protection, involved, and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, involved in domestic biometric surveillance of U.S. citizens as well as immigrants. Even the U.S. Postal Service is involved in domestic surveillance in a very similar way, to sort of mass untethered kind of monitoring. And it's all the more reason that people need to keep our eyes on the ball. whatever Congress enacts in 2014 with respect to NSA surveillance will likely leave cards on the table, and it will definitely leave cards on the table in terms of failing to address the other agencies beyond the NSA that are also taking our tax dollars to spy on us.
And not to mention, of course, the private sector's corporate complicity in all of this. Now, of course, they're screaming bloody murder that their products have been hijacked and markets soured, and yet they're the ones that left the back doors open for all of this intrusive types of activities to occur. I want to ask you about, as I mentioned before, my guest this morning is Shahid Buttar of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. Shahid, your organization has led in many cases and is indeed out in the forefront on so many of these issues. Can you talk to listeners just briefly before we let you go a little bit about the role of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and what we can do to support your efforts?
You're very kind. BORDC has been around for 12 years. Our focus is on organizing grassroots resistance at the local and state level to the surveillance state. And the Snowden leaks pushed the Patriot Act back in the forefront of the public discussion. We never stepped off of it. We've been fighting the Patriot Act since it was first enacted. And it's great to finally see some other people coming to the party. Folks can certainly reach out to our organizing team if we can support you in your grassroots efforts. You can find us online at BORDC.org. And I'd particularly note the financial contributions to our work are very timely this year, which is to say over the next 15 hours, particularly because not only have the Snowden leaks brought the NSA spying issues firmly to the forefront of the public discussion, but we also happen to have a series of matching grants that expire at midnight this evening. So all contributions to our work, again at BORDC.org, all contributions to our work through midnight tonight are not only tax deductible under Section 501c3 of the tax code, but they're also matched 3-to-1, so they'll be more than tripled until midnight this evening. And last thing I'd note is that federal employees can contribute to us through the combined federal campaign. I'm happy to share more information about that if anybody wants to visit us online.
Shahid, thanks so much. We're totally out of time. I want to thank you for that. You've been listening to Cascadia Tuesday, December 31st, 2013. Kate Welch, engineer of the show today. Thanks. Kate Custling-Stevenson, the KBO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, we proudly rebroadcast our recent interview with Academy Award-winning filmmaker Oliver Stone. We'll also play an excerpt of his documentary Showtime series, The Untold History of the United States. My name is Mike Biggs, in for Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Today we are proud to bring to our listeners an encore broadcast of a recent interview we did with Academy Award-winning filmmaker Oliver Stone. In this interview, Dennis spoke with Stone about his documentary series on Showtime, The Untold History of the United States. Dennis begins by asking Oliver Stone the series' origins.
Well, in my film work, I've been going to historical subject matter quite often. I was interested in the big events of my time, America's time. And over the years, I think I became, although I was born conservative and raised that way in school, and everything I did become more progressive as I experimented and as I talked to people. And I reached that place in 2008, having made some more than a dozen films, and I was exhausted by the idea of George Bush's 8 years in office. It killed all of my hopes for this country. So I felt like, rather than make another dramatic film, I really wanted to do one thing for my kids, would be to just look back at my life and see why, from the 1940s to now, what had changed, what was wrong, what had gone wrong, And Peter was an old friend. He'd been studying these issues for 30 years plus. He was a nuclear expert on arms. And we combined our forces, dramatist and historian, and we really went at it from 1900 to now. It was a big deal, much bigger than we ever thought. We turned into a 5-year deal as opposed to a 2.5-year deal. We were over budget, over time. And the book came out of the series. In other words, once we'd started into the series, we realized that we were in pretty deep. So we wanted to substantiate what we were, some of the stuff we were saying with a book. And Peter and his graduate students really turned it on.
A lot of footnotes in there for people who love to...
You know, this stuff is radical, some of the stuff we're saying. We're attacking shibboleths, we're attacking this. We have to back it up. And that book was fact-checked, so was the series three times. The series was a book twice.
Well, I know a lot of this material, but it was revelatory, and the way it was presented on screen was extraordinary. I want to talk to you about some of the content, and then I want to talk about the process and the way you worked, how it differs, I think, from some of the other documentarians working today. But I think the thing that surprised me the most was the whole story around Henry Wallace and the changing of the ticket under FDR. Could you talk a little bit about that? Was that revelatory for you?
Yes, it was, and Peter knew a lot about it. It was a special subject for him. But I must say that grew out of Peter's interest in the atomic bomb. You know, his main study has been that, and why he's written very effectively about why we